of risk, issues of take it from the narrative, chapter 10, till the last page on the finances. Chapter 10, in terms of the program that SASSA needs to deliver, indeed, via UCO, through chapter 10, there is a service in SASSA. And one, we need to say, as we upload SASSA, we must take how many people SASSA is servicing in South Africa, including the ones that are turning illegal. And it's where we say that SASSA is not delivering. I will give you an example. In Johannesburg, a person will take a bus from Zimbabwe. The woman will be in labor pains the time it takes a bus in Zimbabwe. By the time it came to Johannesburg station, next to the boat unit, the child will be born. And what are we saying? We say social development come. But we are not honest when we talk about this. We will be saying social development is not working, SASSA is not there. But not checking where the problem starts from. So, on the chapter 10, I'm saying what SASSA is doing, SASSA do go to the people. And SASSA do have other people, but there are these ones that is so difficult for them, their cases, maybe to deal with it. And it doesn't even close out for them. With the report, chapter 10, I will go to what the minister said last week, especially on the issue of the court. I know it has raised eyebrows to most of the people. And the minister did explain to each year. And if the message from this committee that when you go out here or representing our party outside, let us not distort what is happening. Not to say that the social development in Susan Sasa is not doing anything on the issue of agenda. And we know that now the matter is going to the Constitutional Court. So the department is trying to do, and Sasa wants to say this in terms of that. But the challenge is that we are facing the issue of deduction. This one, we cannot just fold arms and say that we cannot deal with it. We are talking about deductions that are happening to our agent. A factor that they cannot even fight for themselves. A factor that a person cannot even go to the court to say that my money is being deducted. They will go to SASSA office. And Chair, I feel that here we are not doing, SASSA is not doing enough on the issue of deduction. I just wanted to check whether the SASSA is having the audit committee. Because if there's an audit committee in SASSA, they need to deal with the issue of risk. And the issue of risk is where you will have your risk register that will even assist you in terms of your risk, in terms of the environment. So if SASSA audit committee there, let it sit down and check the issue of the risk or the deduction of the grants. It's not saying that the department won't have a mechanism of dealing with this, because somebody is manipulating the data. And we know even if our phones will get an SMS, you will ask yourself what is it today. So I think we need to protect the data of our own people. In terms of the money, I went through your spending and your graph. There's no more than I don't have questions because the report is transparent, if you go through it. But we'll emphasize the issue of the cancer rate. And that one, I don't think the next time when you come to this committee, you must come with an excuse not addressing that. Can we feel this too? Because I think we did hear what the president said in terms of the state of the nation. What is happening in the schools that are there in other got the question that there are no personnel can suffer to something, because as much as we have dropped out in terms of the vacancy rate, we are now in 34.5. That doesn't mean that everyone is going to job, it depends what type of job they are in South Africa. But that's all that one can say, and incidentally, congratulate us on the work that they are doing, and hope our communities up there, maybe they must know the work that SASSA is doing. This is a nice report that one could share. Thank you.
don't think it should be a on-flow. According to the presentation here, about 763 wards were reached through community outreach initiatives. So I would appreciate that next time maybe the department must give us more details. For example, in the first stage is about 18 wards that were reached the first quarter, also 18 wards the second quarter. If maybe they can tell us exactly where this was in the first stage so that one can know what is happening. My second question, Chair, is regarding fraud management system. I appreciate the proactive initiative that has been taken by the department to establish or to develop the fraud management system within the within SASA. But what I would like to know, Chair, is how is the partnership between SIU? Is it still existing? Are they still helping you? Are there certain cases that are still with SIU? That. And then my other question, Chair, according to Chapter 4 of the Social Assistance Act, there was supposed to be establishment of the Inspectorate for Social Assistance. That is solely responsible to curb fraud and corruption. When this office is going to be established? Because if that office can be established, which means fraud and corruption can also be dealt more thoroughly. I think that office, if you read the Act, it clearly shows that it's more powerful as compared to other systems that are there. So that's my question. Thank you. I'll stop here.
Well, I think we have exhausted all our questions, except CEO to say this being the reason why the regional level is here, so that once a member requires to know where these wards are, it won't take us a long time. They can whisper to each other and say, these are the following wards, because answers are here in this office in this meeting here and now. But I also would want the CEO to comment on filling the post of the Internal Audit Committee, which I think is a serious requirement that the Audit Committee, one member has spoken about that already, I'm just adding. So I give the opportunity to yourselves to respond to questions, clarities, or whatever. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members. I'm going to ask Diane Dunkley to assist us with the questions on the IRM and also the refugees, and if she'll report to refugees in general and our meetings with Home Affairs on that matter. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The issue with the internal reconsideration, we have put a mechanism in place. It is automated now in an effort to try and speed up the time frame. In the period that we're talking about, to the 30th of September last year, it is on.
Sorry, okay, is that better? Sorry, Honourable Chair. Wonderful. In the period up to the 30th of September last year, we received a total of 2,656 requests for internal reconsideration. And it's really important to note that of those, more than 95% were rejected. That means the original decision was upheld, and then they go on to appeal. Now, in order to try and streamline that process, we have made it possible for the Appeals Tribunal to access the electronic documents that we use for the internal reconsideration to try and shorten that time frame of 180 days. So for as long as this remains in the legislation, we're going to be looking at constantly sitting on it and making sure we can reduce that period of 180 days because that is what it takes at the moment. However, there has been a decision made because if you look at the rate of rejection of the internal reconsideration, we're really questioning what value it adds, apart from adding another period of 90 days to an administrative process. So there is work currently being done to amend the legislation to have that taken out. so that if anybody applies for a grant from SASSA and it is turned down, they would immediately then go to the appeals tribunal, because the tribunal has their systems in place and it will certainly speed that up. So that is a legislative amendment which is in the pipeline. We're not sure of the time frame, but it is in fact being done, being attended to. The issue, Honourable Chair, around refugees, we had an engagement with the Department of Home Affairs that is also looking at the concerns, particularly around undocumented, unaccompanied minors that come into this country across the border. The challenge that we have as SASSA is if they are undocumented or if they are children of asylum seekers, we cannot assist them. We can only assist them once the parents have been declared refugees and have the necessary documents from the Department of Home Affairs. We had an engagement with Home Affairs last week, and they also spoke to social development to say to the social workers, one of the responsibilities or our first response to these children should not be what grants can we give them, but are they dealt with their parents' knowledge? Or is this part of a child trafficking process? So we've got to try and make sure that the children are in the country with the knowledge of the parents. If they then are with South African caregivers, then we do have a responsibility to provide the financial support, even where the children do not have the documentation. We will work with the Department of Home Affairs to get some kind of documentation, because it is illegal to support children who have absolutely no documents. And that then becomes the Department of Home Affairs' responsibility to document the children. So it is an intergovernmental process that we have to do to make sure that we are able to attend to these children, and certainly in the provinces with the borders, with our neighbours, the problem is a lot higher. We know Limpopo is an area where there are whole communities of people who in fact don't have the necessary documents to be in this country, and then we are dependent on Home Affairs to be able to assist them. If the children have been placed in foster care and there is that legal court order, we have to pay the grant, even where the children don't have the documents, because the court would have found some kind of temporary document to place that child. And the document we're looking for is that court order, and we certainly then would pay the foster grant. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Anne. I think in terms of foster care, as Guy said, we have to work together with social development. But then, because we are actually the people who give effect to the instructions, so there are difficulties, we agree, particularly in some of the areas. And we found, particularly in Limpopo last year, towards the end of the year, towards the border, we had lots of children who were not being supported, and people were coming towards us, and there was a lot of paperwork that we would have to do in order, because some children need to go back, some children are being forced across the border, and we have to be very careful. It's a very tricky situation, and we will continue to work with Home Affairs in this regard. We'll continue, Chairperson. In terms of fraud, I think you wanted to know how our communities are involved in fraud, and I'll ask Ms. Ogle just to speak to that very briefly. On the SIU, our current engagement with the SIU is only in taking over the debtor's book of the work, because the process with the SIU had concluded, because it was a gazetted time in which the SIU assisted us, and that's now finalized. So we don't have the proclamation is has ceased, and so we're just dealing with taking over the debts. But if Ms. Ogle, you could just focus on the trends, and particularly also refer to the arrests we had on Sunday. Thank you. Very shortly.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, CEOs and colleagues. Thank you for the question. In terms of the current relationship between SASSA and law enforcement agencies, just to briefly say on the issue of beneficiaries, and particularly legal or illegal immigrants, we as SASSA form part of the National Joint, which is the committee where all the law enforcement agencies and related departments in the Justice Crime Prevention, Justice Cluster congregate. And through the Priority Committee on Immigration, we have received a list of 8,000 plus ID numbers through Home Affairs collaboration in that structure, that had apparently illegally been obtained by immigrants. That list was given to SASA. We searched it against our stock paying system, and we found that 274 out of the 8,000 were in the system, and obviously there's now a process through grants administration to suspend those grants, etc. So the collaboration is at that end. In terms of the fraud management system, the CEO has responded to the partnership. The partnership is currently with all law enforcement agencies. We have ongoing collaboration with SIU to hand over and finalize matters outstanding. But the partnership is primarily with the South African Police Service, who is the primary law enforcement agency in the country. And through the specialized units in the SACs, we are making good progress, specifically also through crime intelligence-led investigations. We have had, as CEO indicated, arrests over the weekend in KwaZulu-Natal, where four people were arrested, members of the public, for withdrawing grants at ATMs. We have found them to be in possession of about 96,000 rand and 97 SACA cards. We are currently working with SACs to link those cards to our SOC PIN system, so the investigation is ongoing. So in January, we had arrests in the Northwest, where we also found individuals in possession of 137 SACA cards, and they were arrested by the South African Police Service. So the partnership in terms of focusing on investigations where our officials are implicated, as well as in investigations where beneficiaries are allegedly implicated, is ongoing with the relevant departments in the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Council. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, could I ask Mr. Magwaza, the DDG in Social Development on Social Security, to please speak to the Inspectorate?
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you so much, CEO. Maybe we can say that we are happy now that the inspectorate is coming to fruition. The MPSA, Minister of Public Service and Administration, has concurred with our minister about the issue of incubation of starting the inspectorate. And within a week or two, we'll be advertising for the first three chief directors that will be helping us in the incubation. We have been advised by Department of Public Service and Administration that we need to do it within the department so that we can see if it's working or not working in the way that it has been planned. So we'll be advertising those positions, and we'll start populating the inspectorate within at the beginning of April going forward. We hope that by the end of the year we would have started with the work of the inspectorate, which is going to alleviate most of the problems that are within SASA and the problem of being accused of being a player and a referee on the side of SASA. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Can I ask Mr. Earl to please deal with the reduction?
Thank you, CEO. Chairperson, honourable members, the issue around deductions, I think the question was that what is SASA doing enough? I think first and foremost, SASA wants to acknowledge that it does accept responsibility and will continue to obviously work with the beneficiaries to be able to resolve the disputes around the various deductions. And I think maybe just to talk to some of the issues, the deductions of for the last 6 months, we've been able to obtain data through the Reserve Bank and, of course, through the service providers. And if we look at the deductions in relation specifically to the 10%, which is facilitated on the SASA payroll, we now know, obviously, within the last 6 months, starting from September, obviously, to date, that we've received about 66 disputes relating to where some of the pensioners claim that they did not obviously buy the funeral policy in itself, and of course that they would like the policy to be cancelled, and those have been cancelled and the beneficiaries have been refunded. Around your electronic fund transfer disputes, those would have been EFTs that were loaded by other other banks for various other products, which was about 669, I think, which averages about 60 per month, is that those disputes were then taken to the various, obviously, companies who requested those EFT debit orders to be loaded, and those were reversed and the people were refunded. What we're also doing with this is that we're following up with the people to make sure that they did in fact receive their refunds, because according to the banks, obviously, that took the EFT orders, that they have repaid the people. You've got around ATM disputes, which are disputes lodged, which is about 3,900 for the last 6 months, which averages about 500. Those disputes could just amount to where somebody was shortchanged for 10 rand at a particular ATM, or possibly where he might have used his card and, of course, the ATM had said the cash was dispensed, but the cash wasn't dispensed. These are some of the disputes are being lodged, and of course those have been obviously corrected by the various banks, and of course people have been refunded. Around your airtime and electricity is that there's been about at least 2,536 disputes that were lodged, particularly directly to Grindrod Bank, because just to say that in terms of the Banking Act and the Payments Association Act, every bank has to have a call center where people are able to go and lodge disputes if they're happy. They're unhappy with any transaction that happens on their accounts. And I think we've had about an average of 400 of those, and I think where people who have had their accounts obviously debited for any airtime, and think those have been refunded, and of course we've also been following up with those people, because we now know, have the stats and we have the details of those beneficiaries' IDs and contacts, so we would then verify to see whether the service providers have in fact refunded them. Around micro lending, we obviously have received a zero, complaints around that, which we probably don't believe at this time could be true. The fact that there were no disputes lodged around micro lending, but we are following up with that and making sure that we talk with the partners, which is the National Credit Regulator, just to make sure that those people who in fact did borrow and of course and realized afterwards that there was a mistake in terms of having signed the application granting the loan, that necessarily at most times they could not necessarily be refunded, but there would be alternative arrangements to see how they would in essence pay back the money. But around the interventions from South Society is that around that we are looking at a process in terms of where we've conducted a workshop with 14 long-term insurers. These are 14 of the biggest companies in South Africa that provide funeral services. They pay on average about 585,000 policies covering these 14, and which amounts to about almost 40 million rand that SASA facilitates on its payroll to pay for those before the pension is paid into the account. We've had a workshop with the CEOs of the 14 companies to express, a lot of dissatisfaction, particularly around their selling methods and the ethical behavior, the pain points where the agents would then use SASA's name in vain to say that SASA obviously would then allow them to sell the product. And we've also gone in to say that SASA does not support or endorse any financial product that is sold by these companies to the beneficiaries. We would be going through the 585,000 applications in terms of checking whether there was a mandate signed by the client when that policy was sold. They have agreed to provide us with the data by the end of April of each policy. So we'd be getting a copy of a policy, and we've also insisted that we want a copy of the mandate. The mandate would indicate as to whether the client did give them the necessary authority for their accounts to be debited, but also the fact that is there existing policy document that shows that this client did in fact buy this funeral policy. And once we've gone through those 585,000 cases and where the client disputes that he did not buy this or he was forced to buy this, we would then engage with each of those funeral companies and then say to them they would either reverse or cancel those, and the beneficiaries would then be refunded if there is any money. We've managed to, we will conclude that process by the end of this financial year.
Thank you, Mr. Earl. I'll just ask Mr. Dangu just to report on the outcome of the ministerial task team and interventions around that.
There is an allegation or a perception that especially in the rural areas, when people come and complain that what I've got is not what I'm supposed to get, they don't take that name down. Instead, they tell them to go and phone on their own, which therefore means the report that you get of the people who have complained is not covering everyone, especially the illiterate. I would want the presenter to say something about that, because where I come, those girls who have children, and I personally support them at school, so they actually come every time to say, the man I'm supposed to give to my mother to look after my baby, why do you pay for me at school, is so much reduced. And they think it really has proven to me, but that it's on every month they are left 15 rand, 10 rand, 9 rand. When I asked, did you try and phone? They said, yes, we are given a number to phone, but in that number you never get any response. We don't think it exists. So they are not captured as people who have lost the complaint. So I would want a clarity in that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Dangu, could you please also respond with the dispute?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's important to state that the Minister, based on complaints to her directly, complaints coming through SASA, complaints coming through parliamentarians and also civil society, did set up a ministerial task team to look at the issues of deductions in a very comprehensive way. And that task team comprises SASA, DSD, but also representatives of civil society, including advice office people. And after lots of rigorous work, we've come to the conclusion that the intention that we have is to stop all deductions. That the only deduction that will be allowed for the time being is this 26A legally sanctioned deduction, which was for funeral policies. So in terms of that, we're setting up a whole range of systems to stop deductions, including working with the Reserve Bank, working with the National Credit Regulator. In terms of what we do about the fact that it's continuing, the entity has suggested that SASA sets up an internally managed recourse management system to deal precisely with the issue that you're dealing with, Jay, where people come up with complaints, it's seen as a dispute, nobody knows who to tackle or deal with this issue directly, and we're expecting the financial service providers to be dealing with issues that in fact we need to be dealing with, because we feel that the deductions are either illegal or immoral. And I think this is where we're actually going to be setting up an internally managed recourse system within SASA, so that people's complaints are dealt with seriously, and there's a tracking system to find out what has happened to the complaints. So it's not a dispute system only, it's a recourse system, because we do feel that where deductions have taken place without informed consent, people must be reimbursed. So those are the kind of issues that we're setting up. Those are short-term issues. I think the long-term issue is about how do we get into a new contract that will actually stop all deductions, and this is where we are stuck with at the Constitutional Court level at the moment. There is a report available, Chair, that we can share with the committee, and we can also have a longer discussion about what we intend doing around deductions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dangar. Could we please ask Tali Sivignoni to speak to the HCM, the filling of hope? Unless it was
just a minute, very much that I was raising a concern about. It does appear that those who actually are in your offices for SASA, they might be somehow with an assumption, very unscientific. The way they respond
to a person who complains. Now, how are we going to be able to get this data of those who were not recorded deliberately? And I don't want to mention offices that have already been mentioned in the list of complaints about deduction. Maybe it will help if you issue and instruct your CEO to issue a circular that there should be no collaboration in terms of this deduction, to an extent that each complaint must be recorded and reported to your offices every month. Because I can tell you, if you go to the deep rural areas, they are even told that it's not your right. It's only that the government will pay money. So be satisfied with what you have. If you were to conduct public hearings, this would come up very, very clear in various provinces. So my suggestion is to instruct your organization to say a circular, and there must be something that is written. The protocol of managing this is to put a step on your wall that if your money has been deducted, these are the steps you're supposed to be taking, and these are the phone numbers that you should be contacting. Immediately, you see that your money is not, but you should do it immediately, and not come the other day. You must come and show us this is what I got. So you can proceed. Oh, there are members who want to.
The Chairperson, is a follow-up in terms of the ministerial report, in terms of the issue of the data. Maybe we need to get a timeline when that thing is going to be kept. So it must not be a long process because it's beating our pensioners and our weekend up there. And on the issue of education, I know we do have a communication strategy, including the social development. Can't it go out there with an awareness, maybe in all people, educate people about the issue of deduction and what she has to say, which step must they take, and using maybe the language of each and every provinces. Because if you are doing this on the social media, or we are not going deeper to where the organic problem is, so we want to fight this. The department is doing well. Go to the people, show them that indeed we do care, and communicating it directly in the radio station in Soweto, and in Soweto radio is good. Our Gogo Bus is Soweto, they listen to that station. So imagine if in the morning SAFA is there on air telling people about this discussion, so that the community and they have a faith in terms of SAFA. They mustn't see SAFA, oh, this is another load shed that is eating our money. The issue of deductions, it's very serious. And maybe the finance service board, in terms of the finance service provider, you need to have a memorandum of understanding with them, because maybe if the finance service board claims themselves, it won't be easy for them to deduct. So these are the things. That one, Chair, I think we need indeed to find it.
Well, we are not saying that SASA must be deceived and inefficient, but we are dealing with a real situation. Except the legal micro lender, you've got your own machinists at home, where the beneficiary is trapped for life in debt. The beneficiary obtains the pension now, 100% is taken to debt, and he or she borrows again. So it's a recycling all the time, shedding for alcohol, for what and what. I'm requesting that, added to the proposal by the Honorable Mohosi, let's add that message. You must bear in mind that the beneficiaries always respect what comes from government, higher up. So if we can add that dimension, I know we are dealing with the human element, but we must not give up without trying. But that is a painful thing that you see every month. This granny or this beneficiary is forever in debt. So if we can add that message, it will make it easier for us as public reps when we talk in our constituencies to say we understand the situation but try to get out of the state. Thanks, Chair. There was another addition to what
you and maybe pilot one area, because the biggest consumer of these grants are the shop, big shops, like your supermarket, your ShopRite, where ShopRite even put a stamp so that you can go and buy and get change, only to find that the very funds from ShopRite have been finished. And people stand there to enjoy the money they have already bought. They don't get the change because imali perile, finished. So this money, I think one writes in the financial mail known as Mr. CD. He's saying from taxpayer to the chief. And he was actually saying the British and others are just like these building shops in rural areas because they have from this taxpayer to the till and not to the improvement of the health and quality of life of the one, because those people are not supposed to build with this, because there is social, there is human settlement who prioritizes those who get a grant. But now to take the grant of the time and buy building materials, it is what the social development we stand for, as well as staff. So I think we need to have a way of communicating, as the Honorable Mamilo says. Yourself you can do, but I think also the portfolio committee must develop a way of communicating how we link the support of the child grant and the support of that particular family by these other grants that were mentioned here, whether it's the social distress upliftment of, but they should know that if you get a grant, if property, instead of utilizing it for you, you still have another option so that the child continues to be healthy. We can say that in some areas there's no sign that a child gets a grant. They're still very, very standard. They go naked. They don't attend anything like at all, because they are told that, no, we are building. We won't have anything to take to. So that fund has become a family. The minister always emphasized that it's a household support now. Yet we've got these various important programs that were mentioned here. And I can tell you, CEO, many MPs in this parliament do not know about this. I only knew when I became a member of this portfolio committee. So I've been in government many years, more than 20 years, but I could have assisted by telling someone that you've got a grant in aid, you've got a social distress thing. So it's a very concealed, very important public matter. So also when the committee sits, it will also try and get its own strategy of supporting you in getting the information spread in legislatures, so that those members, when they go to their PCOs, they have even this written in their walls that you can apply for this, you are free to apply for this. Now the information, the communication strategy has been able to let us down. But I think this one of emphasizing that we must also find a situation of saying, when you go to SASSA office, read that paper. It will tell you what to do, which is next to the door. Will tell you what to do if there are deductions. Because people are get robbed in a very, very bad manner. You can then proceed. Thank you. Members are satisfied.
Thank you, Chair. I think in terms of the communication strategy, it will be an integrated platform between DSG and SASA on those issues. I just want to say on the CSG, the demand is more than the supply can afford, but we will...
Sorry, SDO. Please don't be long, don't delay, because NDA is now being robbed again. And I can see they are no longer smiling now. They can see that their time is being consumed. Can you try to move towards finishing? Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. We just have two more comments. As I said, the communication strategy will direct the letter to the provinces and they'll direct it to their districts and their regions. Ministers also asked us at pay points in terms of a sample to have a police person there as we detect and get affidavits immediately from the people who have deductions. So we are looking at strategies to deal with that. Ms. Sivignoni, could you just have 1 minute, and the last person would be the CFO on the cost containment that they've done.
Chair. Thank you, CEO. Honourable members and honourable chair. On the issue of the vacancy rate, I think this is one issue that needs to be understood in context. The vacancy rate is informed by the number of posts that were part of the initial blueprint when SASA was established. The blueprint made provision for 18,000, plus minus 18,000 posts. That was in with an understanding that SASA will be responsible for all its functions, for the rendering of all its functions, from application right to payment. But unfortunately, when SASA was established, it was determined that it was not ready yet to pay social grants on its own. Hence, the decision was taken to continue to outsource the payment of grants. Now, the full structure is provided for the whole value chain, but in providing, we're only performing part of the value chain, which means there's this other part that's being outsourced to the service provider. So, but gradually, as far as prepares itself to take over the payment of social grants from CPF, we should see an increase in the number of vacancies in there. Currently, it's only about 10,000 posts that are funded. So unfortunately, when we report, we cannot only report on the funded posts. We have to report on all the posts that were approved by the DTSA. Hence, then the 34% vacancy rate, which we'll still see probably in the next few years until we start filling the posts and taking over the functions from CTS. Thank you.
Maybe we postpone this matter on another number, because we will be dealing with the migration of those areas which were under women and children to your, and also the case that is in court, whether you will be taking this responsibility or you will continue with outsourcing. So if we postpone it and apply a wait and see strategy in the ongoing process, I appeal to members. Can I then allow, I apologize, but I know there's too much. Please go on.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think my question was, the question that I'm responding to is about cost containment and where that come from. SASA actually had austerity measures from 2009-10 financial year, just to stretch the rent that we have been utilizing. However, in 2030, Treasury issued a further guideline in terms of the cost containment measure, which became applicable
within. The presentation, the structure of the presentation, I'll start with the purpose, just to indicate also that I'm here with the Chief Financial Officer for NGA, who's sitting next on my right hand side, Mr. Zwane, who will take the financial part in the presentation. I will look at the purpose and just briefly remind the committee on the NGA mandate. And I will just spend a very brief time just to indicate our operating environment, what has happened in the last year, and then zoom into the program for 2014-15 and our performance. And then the CFO will take over to deal with the financial report. The purpose of this presentation is to present to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development the National Development Agency's 2014-15 Quarter 2 performance, as well as the financial report. Just going back to the NGA mandate, you will recall that our mandate is informed by the Act of 1998, the National Development Act, which states the primary mandate of NGA as to contribute towards the eradication of poverty and its causes by granting funds to civil society organizations for the purpose of carrying out projects or programs aimed at meeting development needs of the poor, but also to grant the civil society organizations those grants for the purpose of strengthening the institutional capacity of other civil society organizations involved in direct service provision to the poor communities. This is important for us, as you will notice, and even as we deal with later on, we deal with our performance, but our performance is around these two areas. That is grants for caring projects and programs aimed at meeting development needs of the poor, as well as the strengthening capacity of the civil society organizations. But also the Act also indicates the secondary mandate, which is to promote consultation, dialogue, and sharing of development experience between the civil society organizations and relevant organs of state through debating development policy, but also undertaking research and publication aimed at providing basis for development policy, but also most importantly, in terms of the secondary mandate, as NGA, we act as conduit for funding from government, foreign government, and other national and international donors for development work carried out by civil society organizations. This is an important aspect of our work, where we act as conduit in terms of ensuring that we do get funds from various sources, as mentioned there, government, foreign donors, and so forth, that we have to the civil society organizations to enable them to implement development work within the poor communities. Informed by this mandate that I've just indicated, we do have our vision and mission, as well as our values that guide the work that we do, as you can see in that slide. Honorable Chair, just to indicate before I go to the performance.
Just a minute. Can I really be honestly request the CEO to leave the mandate and other things, because each time you come, we know we have that legislation. But what is important is to now go direct to your implementation processes, your achievements. Then people want to ask why, you will then go back to me. It's because of my money.
Okay.
Sorry for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The slides, the following three slides, and they're on the operating environment. Really, I'll just go swiftly through them just to indicate a few sentences, but it was just to appraise the committee that last year we undertook the review of NDA, which was done by was commissioned by the Department of Social Development, and just to indicate that this process of the review of NDA is a process that really has assisted us in terms of taking forward NDA in coming up with a new strategic plan, which we will be sharing with you for the new financial year in terms of how to refocus and redefine and enhance our work as the NDA to ensure that we are relevant to our stakeholders, which is the state and the civil society organizations. So those slides are just indicating that process, which I'm not going to waste time on it. I would like to now move and zoom to the purpose of really this presentation, which is performance information for the second quarter. The program that we focus on in 2014-15